Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Kim, and this is the pilot episode of Newborn Libertarian. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to introduce my co-host, Christian. Hello there, Christian.
Hey, how is everyone? And I'm excited to get into the meat of this and really discuss my love for liberty and how we came to it. So let's get this rolling.
Right, guys. So I'll go ahead and talk about what the idea of this was. Basically, I'll go ahead and admit I'm sort of a newbie to libertarianism. I'll let Christian ask me some questions to clarify that as to what I mean by that in a bit. But the basis of this podcast is really what we want to do is have guests on and kind of ask them about how they came to libertarianism, what their background is. And then we'll go ahead and get into some of the current events as well. And just for people that are new, and also there will be something for people who have been in the Libertarian Party for a while. So this is not all just for people who are new. So anybody who has been around for a while, if they're getting ready to shut it off, don't shut it off. There's something for everyone. We're going to basically get to the root of what we're talking about in the current events and then go on to talk about how that current event is affecting everything. So we'll try to cover the bases, get to the root of the issue, and we're going to go from there. So we'll try to cover the bases and everything. But from there, go ahead and I'll go ahead and let Christian go ahead and ask me some questions.
Alrighty, so since Kim is the most important person and the host of the show, and she's the one with all the technical expertise to put all this together, it's only right that she should start because without her, this wouldn't be possible. So, Kim, I understand that you come to, from libertarianism from the left, which is normally not a place where libertarians are coming from, or most converts.
Yeah, true. And it's really strange because, of course, when I was about 16 and a half, I actually probably technically could have been coming from the right almost because I became a Christian, but then I came flying out of the closet at about 24 as a lesbian. So, of course, that kind of leads most people over to the left. And so, of course, when you're convinced, all you're thinking at the time is, oh, I need to have, my gay rights, my equal rights. So of course you're just thinking for trying to find the candidate that is the most concerned with, equality and marriage and everything, and you want to not be a second class citizen, as they were saying. So of course I was thinking, Obama and everything, and everybody was convincing me. And yes, I'll go ahead and admit here, I was one of the people that helped vote Obama into the office the first time around, and everybody's going to give me crap about that. I didn't make the second time around, did not make that mistake. So that was just my concern, was all me. I just wanted my equal rights. But at some point in time, I remember starting to feel a little disillusioned because I noticed something was just a little off. I was wondering, I don't know what else is there, besides my rights. And at the time I was thinking, okay, I voted for this issue, but is that all there is to politics? And at some point, I remember being introduced to libertarianism where somebody just said it's basically the party of stay out of my business. And of course, in college, I was thinking, yeah, okay, I want people to stay out of my business. But then at some point in time, I was still, so focused on, equality and all of that. And so I kind of fell away from libertarianism and just kind of lost focus. So I guess you couldn't really have called me a very dedicated or knowledgeable libertarian at that point in time.
Well, it's interesting that you said you came from to an equal rights standpoint, which is I think basically what we're thinking about is like the marriage equality debate. And so, would you have considered yourself at that point a single issue voter?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was all my concern was just to be equal and to be able to marry and just, people were firing me up and I should be focused on that. So I should, that's all. And I think most people in America can be considered a single issue voter.
I think that's correct. And some people have said that now that the Supreme Court has upheld the marriage equality ruling, that this is really a blow to the left. It doesn't reaffirm them because now those single issue voters don't exist anymore,
Yeah.
or that issue. So, but do you see from your background, from where you're coming from, as a lesbian or as someone who was from the left, where do you think those people still stand? now that marriage equality is their thing, do they still stand with the progressives, or do they see themselves as more liberal Democrats, or do you even see some of them moving over to the conservative side of the fence?
You know, it's really, I think it's kind of odd. You know what I've actually kind of noticed is I see a lot of my friends that were fighting for equality starting to, like, go towards both sides and now really jumping on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon now, actually, as it seems to be the issue they're going for now, which is strange. And I'm seeing it coming from some that start to lean right are a little confused as to if they want to start going left. It's like they want to fight for this issue and they can't decide if this is a left issue or a right issue. But the one thing they want to fight for now is the Black Lives Matter. So it's really strange, like, they want to come together for this issue and they can't figure out if they want to be left or right. It's like they can't figure it out. They're really confused. And it's kind of amusing that they can't figure it out, that they don't have to be left or right for an issue.
Right. It seems like they don't want to pick a side because they don't want to see themselves as part of that side. You know, if they're lifelong conservatives, say, or they lean right, or maybe they lean libertarian, they're so hesitant to put in with the Black Lives Matter movement because they don't want to be seen as liberal. Whereas, you know, from my perspective on even the equal rights marriage, I thought to myself, you know, from a libertarian perspective, I said, you know what, they're doing this backwards. They're solving the marriage equality issue backwards. Now everyone must ask the government for permission to get married. And this is what's a really interesting question for me, because it seems the whole marriage equality question revolves around, you know, because married couples receive tax benefits in the federal government by doing what is not enforced. What's the word I'm looking for? It's the lifestyle that the government deems, or society or tradition has deemed, is beneficial to the institution. The institution of the married family is beneficial for society, they say. Huh. So then married couples must receive some sort of tax benefit. So then from that standpoint, it only makes sense to let gay couples have that benefit as well, to be a gay family or a lesbian family. But then it's so funny to me, because why stop there? You know, why not have polygamists be able to receive tax benefits? Or better yet, if you follow this train of thought to its logical conclusion, why not give single people tax benefits? Because the choice to be a single parent is also a choice pertaining to marriage, and thus should also receive the same kind of benefit, so as not to be discriminatory. So the whole marriage equality debate is so backwards to me. Instead of saying, get the state out of marriage, they said, well, let the state recognize our marriage. It seems to me like taking a Tylenol when you have cancer. Like, you're getting rid of some kind of symptom, but you're not attacking the root of the problem. And it seems that that's what the left is really good at, is deflecting things to solve symptoms when they don't really want to address the problem. Do you see things kind of the same way?
What's funny is that, I mean, also being a single parent is really common these days. So it's kind of unfair to single parents that are maybe trying to work 2 to 3 jobs, trying to take care of their kids, you know, have to get married right about now. Maybe they don't have time. Maybe they don't care to. And so, but you know, what's funny is I used to get really mad when I was still on the left, when people were like, you know, they would say, oh, now we got to have, you know, gay people get married. And they'd say stuff like, well, you know, what's to stop people from marrying trees or something? And it used to be so offensive. And then, you know, I never thought of it as, you know, well, why can't we just offer these sort of things to, you know, people in general? You know, why is it just got to be this whole? And also then I start to think about, well, why does the government have to be in marriage anyway? I just never really thought of these things in this way. I just would always think about religious people just saying crazy things like, oh, and then humans marrying dogs or some sort of thing or something like that. You know, it was just the kind of rationale and logic that, you know, the left would train people on the left to think, so that we would just continue to fight for the equality of gays to get married. And that was just the way they just taught you. And that's the rallying cry, basically.
And I'm sure this is going to be an outlandish statement, but when people say, well, why not let people marry trees or dogs? I say, well, yeah, why not? you know, who cares? I don't care. It doesn't affect my life. And I kind of, that to me, that's what gets to the whole point of libertarianism is it's not the government's job to enforce or to promote a certain kind of lifestyle, you know, but it's also not their job to reward you for participating in that sort of lifestyle either. That's for individuals to figure out. And I think that was one of the first things that led me towards coming to libertarianism, because I came from a very right religious family. But before I really converted in really into libertarianism, I still kind of felt like I was a moderate conservative. You know, I knew I was fiscally so-called conservative. The Tom Woods Show yesterday, there was an episode about, you know, where do liberals and conservatives come from as opposed to libertarians? Where does their thought process come from? So I guess you can't say I was really fiscally conservative. The values imparted in me, I was very fiscally libertarian from a young age, but because I only thought there were two sides, you know, I thought it was the conservatives, but I knew, you know, I kind of looked at it from a pragmatic standpoint. I said, you know, why are the conservatives still fighting against gay marriage and all this kind of stuff? So they just pulled their heads out of their butts. They'd win a lot more elections. And that kind of started the ball rolling for me.
Any other questions for me or?
I want to, this is really interesting for me. I was thinking about this because you are a diamond in the rough, and you are our, what do you call it? I don't know what you would call it. And this is not to, you know, belittle you or put you in a box because of your life choices. But people look at libertarians, and the first thing they say, especially from people on the left, say, oh, you're selfish, and you don't care about minorities or poor people or people who live alternate lifestyles and this and that. You just want to discriminate and blah, 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 blah. But really, and they come out and say, well, the reason that you guys don't have any traction as libertarians is because there are no women. You don't see women libertarians. You're seeing more and more every year. But also they say you don't see any homosexual or alternate lifestyle kind of libertarians or minority libertarians, because supposedly the narrative is that libertarianism or a free market is bad for minorities and it's bad for people who live alternative lifestyles. But here we are, and I'm looking at you right now. You are an African-American female homosexual who's come to libertarianism. And I just want to – are you taking any flack from people because of that? And what have you seen in the libertarian movement that maybe dispels this myth that we don't care or we hate these kinds of people?
Well, I think the funny thing was when I the first group of libertarians I actually came into interaction with, of course, was the Jason Stapleton private group. For some odd reason, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't checked out the Jason Stapleton program, I have no clue why you're not checking it out. You should be checking out Jason Stapleton. Awesome. But when I joined the private Facebook group, one of my first questions was, because I did run into not a lot of black people or homosexuals or any other minorities in libertarian groups. And one of my first questions was, you know, I noticed in a lot of groups, I didn't see a lot of black people. And then, of course, I had some people come in and be like, why does it matter? And I'm just thinking, of course it doesn't matter, but that is the reality. It shouldn't matter. But that's unfortunately how it is. And then some people, you know, were kind of like, blah, and they, you know, got crazy about it. And some people were like, well, you know, that's, and then, so after a while I came to a realization, it's just the fact that, I just think, there's not a lot of people that speak up about libertarianism in the first place. It just seems like a fringe to a lot of people. And I think maybe, I guess the more we speak about, because we talk about it all the time, there's a messaging problem sometimes in libertarianism. And so I just figured that might be the problem, is that we just don't, it's just not spoken about. And especially in media, you just don't see a lot of people talking about it. We're just always told that we're isolationists, you know, we don't care, we don't have any empathy, you know, sympathy, you know, we're all just about ourselves, which I found was not true, because when I came to find out more people, it's not that we don't care, it's just we realize, you know, everybody, you know, we own ourselves. I mean, we're free to do what we want, and race doesn't matter because I'm who I am. Nobody has a right over my body. I have a right over my body, and I don't have a right over your body. And so when you come to that conclusion, you know, my color, what I prefer to do, the people I prefer to date, the things I do don't matter for anybody else, you know. So as I came to that realization, I realized libertarianism is not something that involves race at all, because it's my body. And so I think as that message gets out, people start to realize this has nothing to do with race or sexuality, because it's my body. So as I start to realize that, yeah.
I think that's awesome. Because one of the fundamental things that people will attack us on is that if we say, first of all, that it doesn't matter, they take that to mean, well, you don't care. When that's not necessarily true, because libertarians are looking at things from a completely different perspective than anyone on the right or left. And we're looking at it from such an individualistic standpoint, where just because you're brown or you're white or you're black or you're this, it doesn't mean that you are the same as other people who share those characteristics with you. You just happen to have something in common, but that doesn't mean that you must think the same way or you must do this the same way. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go answer my door real fast. So if you have anything to say about it, or you want to talk about kind of the message, maybe a messaging problem, how to get the word out, you know, is there a controlled thought process that's going on in some of these minority communities? Mm-hmm. How do we reach out and kind of dispel this stigma that's on libertarianism for some of these people?
I just think basically, I guess maybe some people would probably try to suggest maybe we would have more people that look similar to those communities go out and talk about it, but I don't think that necessarily has to be it. I just think maybe just the knowledge of libertarianism. I just think the problem is media has just gotten so much of a hold on the left and the right, progressives and neocons always going out and being the ones in media just spreading the word and getting to be the ones who have the last say and the last word on what libertarianism is, and just the left and the right just have so much control. I just think the more we get libertarians out there in the media, like podcasting, doing radio and all that, people will see that, you know, we aren't isolationists just hanging out somewhere that don't care about anything. So it doesn't matter, say, if I go out and talk to people of any race or any color or any community. I don't even think it has to be specific. If I go out and talk to black people or white people, I just think the fact is we just need to get out there everywhere, on TV, on radio, podcasts, just everywhere, talking about libertarianism and letting people really know what it is. And then I just think people will start coming in, because they'll finally realize what it is and get the truth of it.
I completely agree with you. I think that what makes libertarianism so attractive, and what was attractive to me, for me, was I found it through my own thought process and just trying to be consistent with the principles that I knew were true. And basically what it comes down to, you know, don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. And that's the consistency of libertarianism is so appealing, and just how logically consistent it is. And how much it makes sense. You know, there's no contradictions with it. Uh-huh. There's nothing you have to say, well, I agree with this, but you agree with this, so you believe this. You know, and you, once you see things through that kind of paradigm, it's everything else becomes so much clearer. You don't have to ask someone else what I should think about this. You're able to put your own thought process together. Well, how does this improve my life? How does this affect someone else's life? You know, am I making someone else's life better through this decision or not? Uh-huh. And I think that I come to have the belief that most people are smart. You know, maybe they're not educated, or maybe they chosen a different career path, or maybe they've had a different upbringing. But people are able to think for themselves when you give them the tools to do so. So I think that what makes us so special is our ability to, when we do get the platform to speak, that we put together this coherent message in a compelling way that leaves racial borders and all these other things behind, and just, hey, look, we have a message to improve your life and the lives of your families, and how to help you help other people, which in turn helps you again. You know, there's so many things that become so clear when you embrace this philosophy that I think is very attractive. And I do think that we need to, you know, become the squeaky wheel, so to say.
I'm going to ask you a question. I want to get into asking you the questions. as of recently, when I was about 26 is when I first got into libertarianism and then kind of fell out of it and went to the left, is actually about a month ago is when I actually decided, you know, there's that one time I looked into something, maybe I should actually, you know, because I had registered as a libertarian. And so I was like, maybe I should figure out what I was talking about. And I really got into it. I started listening to Jason and just really started studying. Like, I was reading the heck out of it and just finally started learning and just dedicated myself and realized that I was telling one of my friends that I was like, when you become a libertarian, it's not just a political idea. It's pretty much, to me, it seems more like a lifestyle because it starts to infiltrate every aspect of your life because it kind of gives you an ideal because it basically teaches you responsibility for yourself. You know, all the choices you make, you have to take responsibility for. Whereas other political parties, I feel more like it's, you're kind of taught how to think all of the time. I mean, the only time you think about being a Democrat is election time or a Republican around election time when there is an issue coming up or, you know, somebody shoots up a Planned Parenthood or something like that. All of a sudden you're a Republican or a Democrat. But in libertarianism, you're kind of, it's just an all the time thing because you're always making decisions and judgments on everything. You're thinking of insurance. You're thinking of all the stuff you're doing and how this is going to affect you and your choices. And so it's like something changes when you make that choice to dedicate yourself. And of course, when I said that, she says, you know, every libertarian says that. I'm like, well, you know, it makes sense. She kind of looked at me like, you know, probably like I, you know, joined a cult or something. But it's not that. It's just kind of a mindset you're in because now you actually have to think about what you're doing. You actually have to think about your choices. It's just, you know, you actually have a knowledgeable answer of why you make the choices you make. You can't just make them blindly or have somebody give you the answer. You actually have to know what you're doing and why you're doing it and the reason behind it. But from there, I want to ask you, I know you told me about it the first time we talked, but how you became a libertarian, because I know you said you didn't exactly know what the word was when you first kind of started forming the idea. So I want to know your story.
I want to answer your question first, and I'm going to answer. But you brought up a great point, and I know from talking before we started recording that you have been a voracious reader and a really great student of the material and of the thinkers. What have you come to? What has been your favorite book so far on libertarianism or economics or anything like that?
You know, of course, one of the easy ones has definitely been For a New Liberty. I really like just because I like how Rothbard like kind of is a really easy kind of read. He puts things really simply. But it's kind of like there's just so much that I'm reading right now and I read some of it, so much of it at one time. But then I really, really like Tom Woods as well, because he just, there's just something about him. And I think it's just easy because, you know, he's current and you can of course hear his show like every day. But yeah, I think I'm really, really into Rothbard right now because he just puts things so simply. But of course I know as I go on, I'll probably have a lot of favorites going on. But yeah, I'd say those are the two I'm really into right now. And
you definitely have a lot of favorites.
Yeah, I
love reading Rothbard. He just, and if you've ever listened to some of his lectures on YouTube, you really need to. If you're listening to this podcast, it's such a treat. The guy is so funny. You just wouldn't believe it. And he puts things so simply. And you know, Tom Woods says this all the time. Rothbard knew everything. He knew every event seemingly in human history, and he read entire libraries. And the guy was a scholar among scholars, and one of the greatest thinkers, you know, I think ever. If you're coming to this and you don't know who Murray Rothbard is. But something else I wanted to add on what you said earlier is that, you know, sometimes you say, oh, I'm a libertarian, and people look at you like you're in a cult, which I always thought was hilarious because especially coming from where I observe people on the left, you know, what is cultish about libertarianism and what is not cultish about praying to some entity for food, shelter, you know, money, healthcare, life, and all this other things. They're basically, you know, someone said one time, you know, you can't separate church and state when the state is your church.
Yeah.
Something like that. So who really the cultish ones, I don't know. But getting back on track here, what kind of led me to libertarianism? I had heard the word before, and I never really looked it up. Like I said, I was very fiscally and logically what you would put on the conservative side of the spectrum. But what is really, it's not really the conservative side of the spectrum, because the conservatives are some of the biggest proponents for, you know, tariffs and protectionism and nationalism and protecting United States interests overseas. That wasn't where I was coming from. I was coming from it as a more probably the one lesson that stuck with me from conservatism that I explored to its logical conclusion was nobody can take your money and give it to someone else because it's your property. So I came to my quote-unquote economically conservative side from the standpoint of property rights. And through, you know, even in high school world history classes, you know, capitalism was what brought so much wealth to so many people around the world. And, you know, and at first, you know, I couldn't really make the distinction, but I think it's very important to make the distinction when you're going through world history and people want to point, oh, the, you know, the capitalism, the Western nations have these empires all over the place. But you can't confuse capitalism with imperialism and colonialism, and especially mercantilism. Mercantilism is, it's kind of a prehistoric, almost Trumpian kind of philosophy where your country is competing against another country and you have to get all the gold for yourself so you can dominate hegemony over the world. Whereas capitalism comes from the standpoint of not the nation as its own identity, from the individuals in the nations owning their own property and doing what's best for them. My first economics class I took in college was really the springboard to me. I kind of feel like I had the perfect storm going to realize that this is what I thought all along. You know, I was told I was conservative because I knew I wasn't a progressive. And I will not use the word liberal for the left because they're not liberal. They're not liberal one bit. They're going to tell you how to think. They want your money. They want you, you know, to fall in line, to listen to the narrative, to be able to change your opinions depending on, you know, what the idea of the time is. There's nothing liberal about left-wing authoritarianism, you know, so let's just call them progressives. We're the real liberals here. We care about liberty and freedom and the right for an individual to do their own thing. But, you know, I was already kind of predisposed, even though I came from a religious family, to the tolerance of alternative lifestyles, especially, you know, the gay rights movement or things like this. We're coming from a religious evangelical Bible Belt right family, it's very, you know, you don't like that. You know, we're not supposed to like it. But even if I were to not like that kind of lifestyle, being a libertarian would allow me to tolerate that lifestyle, even if I didn't like that lifestyle. You know, it's the whole thing. I support the right of the Christian baker not to bake a cake for a gay wedding. I think that's stupid. And if you're running a bakery, you should want to bake for everyone so you can get some money. And that's what I always tell people, you know, green's everybody's favorite color. It doesn't matter what you are. If you can make money, green, you know, you like green more than anything. You like the money. And people want to challenge me on that, but they're false. So this is absolutely not true. I was kind of already predisposed to the ideas of real tolerance in my mind, of letting people live their own lives and the idea of freedom and capitalism. But another thing that really put me towards libertarianism is because I love to debate and argue. And Kim and I are both members of the Jason Stapleton private Facebook group page. And it's a great page. And we met each other on that Facebook page. And if you want to get plugged in libertarian news of the day, excuse me, you need to go listen to Jason Stapleton program, get plugged into his private Facebook group, become a supporting listener to get the news and ideas and all this, but also to meet some really great people. And, you know, it's not full of libertarians. But I'm sure if Kim has seen me post on there, I love arguing with people. I love debating. I love all this other thing. And what's awesome about libertarianism is if you pursue it to its logical conclusions, you cannot be beaten. Because rule number one of debating and arguing is don't contradict yourself.
Yeah.
Once you become a libertarian, you will not contradict yourself. You'll be able to point out everyone else's contradictions, and you will see them shut down. And, you know, if you like debating on Facebook, everyone does it every now and then. I like to do it all the time. I've got to watch myself or I'll go overboard. But look at it this way. When you're debating with a conservative or a progressive, you're probably not going to change their mind. But what's really awesome for me is I'm able to debate other people with the concept of, I know other people are watching this, and I know they do. Other people watch what you comment on Facebook, and if the long discussion goes back and forth. And the people really interested will read those things. You're putting on a show for them. You're not putting on a show to convert the other person. If you can, that's awesome. You know, but you want to enter the debate stage where you know the people watching, you can change their minds. But of course, you know, logic, as a libertarian, logic is your best tool. And if you love arguing, you know, this is the place for you.
Yeah.
It's kind of where I came from. And, you know, from a very young age, I remember being in church and I had Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And I was showing people my Yu-Gi-Oh cards. You know, some of them were shiny. It was so awesome. And the pastor came and took them away. And I didn't understand that. It's like, those are my cards. And I never got it back. So I was kind of, that was my first experience with religious tyranny. But yeah, that's where I come from. You know, I kind of come from a right, what you would call a right wing family, but especially on my dad's side, and you know, debate was always encouraged. And that's you have to constantly, if you're not constantly challenging yourself and your own ideas. Yeah, I do this to this day. You know, I thought about the regression theory. You know, does the regression theory make sense with Bitcoin? You know, Mises theory. And I through debate and myself and kind of looking some things up, you know, if I can throw this out there, if you read What Has Government Done to Our Money by Mary Rothbard, it's a short essay, short meaning 137 pages. But
yeah, that's short in some of the literature I've seen.
it kind of dawned on me that, you know, Bitcoin isn't the money in itself. Bitcoin is the deposit note that backs up, that is the reference of what is it backing it up on. So when people say, oh, Bitcoin is so volatile, well, it is, but that's just because the fiat currency behind it is so volatile. So, I mean, through challenging yourself and reading the other side, what they think, that's how you become a smarter person. Forget libertarian, but that's kind of where I kind of went myself, is I wanted to be logically consistent. I don't want to be a hypocrite. And I just kind of stumbled into it. And when I started reading all this material coming to real libertarianism, you know, when I first read Bastiat or even Rothbard, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is what I've always thought, you know, which is really interesting because I was defending natural market monopolies to people before I even read Rothbard's theory on monopoly. You know, monopoly is maybe not always a bad thing if the free market is the engine of its creation. So you'll be surprised if you're new to this, if you start reading these books, how this isn't really a way anyone's ever told you how to think. You will realize that this is what you thought all along, and someone finally put it into words. And it's great to have, when you finally realize that other people are out there who believe what you believe, it's so uplifting, and I have gained so much confidence through that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you're talking about, it does help you to debate and argue a lot better and contradict yourself a lot less. Like I was saying before we started this, I actually got in a debate, and I have a friend that has always been really good with debating, and we were debating about Obama sending personnel into Syria, and there's, of course, I'm still, you know, as I'm new, there were a couple things that points I was making, and he had corrected some stuff. And then one of the things I also noticed is when you make an error when you're starting out, you know, when you're on the left and the right, you get super emotional about your debates. And then when somebody points something out, you know, you want to hang on to your point, you know, emotionally, and you never want to let that go, and you never want to learn from it. And I realized where he pointed something out, and I was like, oh, you do have a point there. I see where you're going with that. And you start to realize that, and you start to realize when you're right, no one knew, hang on to that and point out the facts of why you're right. And you realize where you make your error. And it's good to know how to do that in debate so that as you grow and learn, you know how to not make those kind of mistakes, know when to not hang on to things emotionally, and always build your logic so you don't run into those kind of mistakes and hang on to things with emotion.
Oh, definitely. And this goes back to Jason's podcast, and where he says, you know, we stand on the principle of liberty, and everything comes from standing on a principle and running any idea through your non-aggression generator or kind of formula. You know, is this aggression against people? Does this help people? You know, does this make any sense? And once you take back and you stop bouncing around things on how they make you feel, and you run it through a principle or what you know or logical and objective facts, you're able to not only become more self-consistent, but you're also able to find where someone else is right and where to reach them from that standpoint. Say, hey, yeah, you're right about this point. Now let's explore this point that you're right to its logical conclusion. And that's how you can kind of lead them. Says, yeah, this is at, find the similarities among people. I mean, there are similarities among the left and the right, but you just have to, and I love putting them through the shredder just as much as anyone else does, you know, on the left and the right. But eventually, sometimes you want to find things to agree on, because that's where you can get them. And you say, I gotcha, you know. And Jason has, you know, the five principles of liberty, which are really all derivations from the non-aggression principle. But I would encourage everyone to check out that podcast, and it really helps you become consistent. If you're not consistent in what you believe, it's just so funny. There are only two consistent political philosophies. There's libertarianism, and there is totalitarian communism. Those are the only two logically consistent political theories. And that's just kind of where I stand. But the consistency aspect of it is just so much fun, because when you start to see, Henry Hazlitt wrote in Economics in One Lesson, you know, you always see the same arguments again and again and again, just with different topics or in different situations. He says the ideas just come back in different clothes. Like, if you've ever played Halo, you never die. You just come back in a new part and play again. You just respawn. I completely agree.
The non-aggression principle should be something people, if you explain it to them, they'd be like, you know, that would make a lot of sense. If you tell people, it's basically, I don't take stuff from you. I mean, what you have is yours. I don't try to invade your privacy. I don't take your stuff. Does that sound fair? And people are like, yeah, you know, I don't try to aggress against you. You don't aggress against me, right? I don't take your property. You don't take mine. Makes sense, right? And people are just like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, when I explain to people that, and they're like, oh, that's what you guys believe. I'm like, yes, makes sense.
It's so funny because kindergartners do this so well, right? But it's not until they have their first class or their first lesson on government where they take all the things they learned in kindergarten, all the ethical things, don't steal, don't hurt people, and they just throw it out the window. It's like I tell people when I talk about economics, it's like, you know, microeconomics is a wonderful class. You learn about opportunity costs, supply, demand, you know, interactions in the market, suppliers, distributors, wholesalers, all kinds of these different things. But then when you get into macroeconomics, and it's really taught backwards, you know, macro should be taught second, micro should be taught first. But a macroeconomics is like, you know, supply and demand and market forces and how you can reach these mutually beneficial exchanges. Well, let's throw that out the window because I know how I can do it better. You know, it's a Friedrich Hayek said that, or something to the extent, I'm probably paraphrasing here, and I am paraphrasing, there's no probably about it, that economics is about what we don't know. It's about how we can let these people who do know all this information out in the market solve their own problems to the greatest extent possible, because not one person knows everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's admitting what we don't know and what other people know and letting the people who are good at these things figure them out instead of one person or one central authority. Tom Wood says, you know, with a bullhorn out there running around telling everyone else what to do. In Leonard Reed's Eyed Pencil article, and the people who wrote the Tuttle Twins books, they're children's books about libertarianism and liberty, did a book about the pencil, which is basically no one person knows how to make this simple object called a pencil. It comes from all over the world. And it's true that not one person knows this kind of thing. And everyone out there has to come together with their own skills to really solve problems. And in that sense, you know, when you come to, especially people on the left, they want to say, oh, but the little guy and all these people getting screwed, and we like democracy and this and that, and by the people. It's like, there is no other system that operates by the people more than the free market.
Yeah.
It's just, what democracy is I always tell people, you know, two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. But, I mean, is democracy better than totalitarian monarchy? Well, of course, but, you know, getting punched in the shoulder is better than getting punched in the face. I'd rather not be punched at all.
Yeah.
Is kind of where I stand on that. So, it's just so, the wonders that my girlfriend can't stand it when I walk around and we're in the store and I see something and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like, dude, I would tell her, oh my gosh, you know how many people or how many countries were involved in making this and they had to get it from one place or another, and she goes, just stop it, buy the eggs. and we get them. But yeah, that's kind of my story. I come from it more of, I was always very independent. I don't like people telling me what to do, and that from that, and it's kind of just a perfect storm for me. And I know it's that way for a lot of other people. So yeah, that's me.
You know, I just had to add something. When I came to libertarianism all of like a month ago, another thing I realized that's difference between being a Democrat and a Republican, that libertarians, when you get in, they also urge you to learn economics pretty darn quickly. Like, that's part of it. They're like, please learn something about economics. Whereas I wish a lot of these Bernieites, the Bernie Sanders lovers, I'm like, please learn some economics. Buy a calculator. It's on your iPhone, your Droid. Learn some economics. Like, learn to count. Because libertarians are like, here, we're going to give you all this literature on economics. And, you know, like Tom Woods, everybody's just telling you, here's some podcasts about economics. Even if you don't exactly want to study it, here's some podcasts about people who will tell you about it. You know, you go to other parties and they can't be bothered to tell you anything about economics. They don't even know. So you get all these people who are like, the 1%, we're going to tax them. I'm like, do you people not understand? There's not enough for the 1% to pay for you. So I thought that was also an interesting point. As libertarians, you will hear about economics. You can be searching Jason's page and somebody will post about economics.
I agree. Libertarians, no matter who you talk to, we all have some sort of fascination with economics because it's how people come together. This is how people cooperate voluntarily. And when you look at the left and the right, you know, what are their degrees in? It's, they're either lawyers or they're political science majors. And I always think it's funny, political science is all about how to bribe people to put you in office.
Yeah.
Economics is about something different. And that's not to, you know, dispel, you know, there's Keynesian economics, and even the Keynesians will admit that, you know, the market needs to be able to do its own thing, but sometimes we got to give it a push. So my first economics teacher was a classical economist. I would not be considered a classical economist, but, you know, the classical economists and the Austrians, if you've never heard that word, they kind of come to the same conclusions from different places, and the classical economists kind of, you know, seem kind of hesitant. When I asked my teacher, and he says, you know, all these goods are provided better than the free market. And he's like, you know, if that's true, then education should be provided better than the free market. And he goes, well, that's kind of extreme. And I was like, well, you've got to kind of be consistent. So, but methodology is a completely different discussion, and we can get into that and
yeah,
all kinds of other things. But yeah, economics and the fascination with how people can somehow be left alone to do their own thing but become richer without someone telling them what to do. And when I say someone telling them what to do, I mean in the sense of a state or a government, not such as you go to work for a boss and your boss who has the experience knows what to do and tells you what to do. Obviously completely different.
Yeah.
And some people, especially on the right, because I put myself in the anarcho-capitalist camp, I come from the concept where everything is a good or a service, be it leisure, policing, courts, whatever. It all can be provided by the free market. And he goes, well, there has to be some kind of government. And I had to make this very important distinction for him. I said, government in the sense that there are rules that people choose to abide by, yes, because people can't run around all willy-nilly like chickens with their heads cut off, but they wouldn't do that anyway. You know, they recognize not coercive authority, which is the state, the authority to put you in jail if you don't do what they want, but the authority or the skill to recognize things and tell you and to coach you how to do things and bring the best out of you, I think is very important in the sense that there's government in that way. And I think that's also a big distinction, excuse me, between minarchists and anarchists. I think a lot of minarchists or libertarians are hesitant to put the anarchist label on themselves for two reasons. And one is they don't want to be perceived by everyone else as one way. But if you're already, say, you're a libertarian, you know, everyone already thinks you're crazy anyway.
Yeah.
So why let that stop you? And number two is that there's an association that somehow anarchy means no rules whatsoever. And you can't have a corporation. You can't have a business. You can't have anyone tell you what to do. It really comes down to a property rights issue. And once you get down to the real fundamentals of it, and you have a master of the fundamentals of economics and how this kind of stuff works, and I know you've been reading a lot of economics, and it's just so interesting. And it's not about there's a misconception that when I tell people, yeah, I really love economics, I read it in my spare time, they say, oh, that's a lot of math, isn't it? And I know some of you libertarians coming from the Milton Friedman school, you know, there's value in knowing arithmetic. Of course there is. But I say to people, no, economics is about human action. You know, that's the title of Mises' treaty. It's about how people come together to utilize scarce resources and what they value and how they exchange for what they value with something someone else values. And, you know, just throwing a bunch of money somewhere and putting it through a formula and running projections and regressions and all that, that's not really what economics is about. That's not the spirit of economics. That's it's a good way to find historical data and to remove certain variables. But that's not really what economics is about, you know, to me. And I'm not a trained economist. I don't have a PhD. But there's a lot of misconceptions about economics that goes around because either that or people think, oh, it's just all about the money. And when people, you know, they come to the thing that money is the root of all evil. And they throw these things out there. And I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm rambling, but I just love to talk. They say money is the root of all evil. But if you have that any kind of schooling in economics at all, one class, one micro, one macro class, you know money is what allows us to exchange things and get around, you know, you having two chickens and me having a horse and me not having to cut off my horse's leg to get your chicken. You know,
yeah.
Money allows us to exchange things for each other that allows us to get around a coincidence of wants. You know, what if I'm a barber and I really want a pencil? Do I have to find someone with a pencil and cut their hair to get half a pencil? You know,
yeah.
Money solves all these things, but it's not all about, you know, the math and the cold heartedness. It's about being open hearted and open minded enough to let people do their own thing and marvel at how well they do.
Yeah, and also, as far as I remember, that whole, everybody uses that quote, I'm like, I thought the, you know, everybody said the, like, it's the root of all evil, is the love of money? The love of money? Never mind. Anyway, but, yeah, that's the only reason. Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
The love of money, because this gets us to attack the Keynesians, because they have such a love of money that that's all they count in the economy, you know. They measure success by how much money you got today versus how much money you got yesterday, you know. And of course, they solve for inflation. You know, they're not that stupid, you know. But it's not, you know, the measure of GDP is the measure of how much money is flowing around, which is in reality, you know, money is not what you want. Money is the means to the ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ends are, you know, how much bread you have, the quality of your bread, what kind of TV you have, your opportunity if you lose your TV. How easy it is for you to get another TV that's even better because technology has progressed so far. You know, economics is about how humans use scarce resources to acquire wealth through trade, not money. Money is the means to the ends, and working for money is a very good way to acquire wealth. But wealth is the ends, not money.
Yeah, money's not in itself. Money itself is not evil. It's the love of money. It's the idolizing money so much. And, you know, the money in itself is not the evil part. It is the means. But, yeah, I agree. Like, economics is not the whole math thing. Like, just believe me, my degrees are in English and film. I hate math. I know enough math, obviously, to do the basics. But, yeah, economics is definitely not what, like, I was reading about economics on the bus on my way to work. Like, I do love reading about it. But how long were we thinking to have these podcasts? We're, like, in the 49-minute zone. I just now looked.
You know, libertarians can talk for hours about these things because it's so hard to find another one of us.
Yeah.
It's so hard to find someone who's come out of the cave, so to speak.
Oh, well, I'm thinking even getting close to an hour because I just have to ask this. So, minimum to me, at least about an hour at least. And if people are tired of listening to us, there's always a stop button. But I have to ask. So, are you saying you are an ANCAP, a.k.a. an anarchist, because I've been, of course, after, because in the Jason Stapleton private chat, there's been a lot of talk about how a lot of the discussions devolve into the minarchist, anarchist, like, thing. That's just where a lot of discussions go. So I started reading a lot of Stephen Molyneux, and I just, as you can tell, I just read a lot of stuff at once. You know, some people read one book at once. I'm just like, give me all the books, just all the books at one time. And I've been reading that.
Yeah.
And
all the books.
Yeah, all the books, all of them. And I was reading I won't pull it out of my bag, but there's a book of something about the right and wrong of the compulsion of the state or something like that that I'm trying to read, which I guess is dealing with a lot of basically theory of anarchists. So I'm starting to understand that. And of course, anarchy, of course, that term, you know, is not something that what everybody thinks it means. They like, you know, it's just chaos. And that's not how, what it's always meant. And a lot of anarchists are trying to take that back to what it meant. And if you can possibly explain what it really meant before and what it really means to you, because the world just thinks it's supposed to be chaos. And that's not really what it means.
Well, it's so funny. There, most, I'd say almost 90% of our lives, hopefully longer than that, is driven in an anarchist way, whereas no one tells you you have to go to work. You know, there's no gun to your head you have to go to work. There's no gun to your head that you have to eat this for dinner or that for dinner. You know, you make all these decisions on your own without anyone telling you what to do. But there are places where the government does get involved, where especially when you get paid. You know, I looked at my paycheck. I'm 21 years old. I don't make a whole lot of money, but I saw 20% of my paycheck go away. That makes me kind of mad, you know. Not even from a libertarian perspective. That just makes me mad, you know, when you lose something that you had or you wanted to do something with. A lot of conversations, and I think that's a testament to the libertarian movement, that we're able to have those kinds of conversations, that we can think about these kind of higher level critical thinking kinds of things and still like each other. Whereas a progressive, you know, if you say the wrong thing, well, by golly, you're an intolerant bigot. Or if you're, you know, if you're from the right and you say the wrong thing, well, you're either anti-Semitic or you're going to hell or this or that. I think that's it. But statements do devolve on that. I think someone said libertarians agree on 95% of the things, but on the 5% we disagree on, we argue 100% of the time. And just, I think it's just, debate is just a whetstone for the sword that, you know, that is our mind, because it's how we become sharper. And if you can find a place where we can have a limited government that stays within its means, that only defends life, liberty, and property, and I can pay for voluntarily, sign me up for it, you know, because that's better than what we have now. But I'm in the camp that, you know, I'm not going to put people down because they say they're a anarchist. And it goes on both sides, you know. There are people who say, oh, the anarchists are the purists and they don't tolerate you because you're not pure enough. But then there are people who say that about the anarchists who are doing the same thing by putting them down. So just, let's all just, excuse me, join hands and talk about these ideas and become friends and really reach out to people who've not heard these ideas before. But if you're interested in it, explore it to its fullest extent, because I was a anarchist before I was an anarchist. Everyone was. So it's stupid for anarchists to just put down anarchists because we're not like them, because you weren't born that way. I promise you were not. That's not how you always thought. But someone said, you know, what is the difference between a anarchist and an anarchist? And they said, 1 month.
Yeah, that's basically, I feel like you start out as a, because that's how I started out, because, you know, you're basically moving from, you know, status, it's all you think is there's a government, to, and it feels like the next logical step is to go to minarchist. And then from there you realize there's more, and somebody tells you, oh, there you can be, you know, there's anarchy, and you're like, oh, that makes sense. And then that's how you move. That just seems to be how it goes for most people.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not trying to pressure you. We love libertarians of all persuasions. You know, whether you're more of the paleo conservative.
Which is confusing. I didn't know there were more of those. I didn't know that was a thing.
They're basically conservatives who just don't like interventionist foreign policy, or you could call them, you know, classical conservatives.
Oh, okay.
You know, or maybe you are more classical liberal, or you are, you know, you're a, call yourself a free market Democrat. All these people have libertarian leanings, mm-hmm. that if you can just open the door, they'll pursue it themselves.
Okay. Makes sense. I have got a lot to learn. As somebody was saying, they were like a paleo-libertarian. I was like, oh, man, there's just more denominations than the gay, lesbian, bi, transgender questioning. I don't know. There are 8 million letters in the GLBTQ community, so.
They might call it the A through Z community, because there's something for everyone. you know, unless you're a white man, then there's not something for you, that you're the enemy.
Yes, apparently you were on your mountain of privilege, which one of these, we're going to have an episode about white privilege, because that amuses me so much.
If I can find the article I wrote, not the article, but the essay that I wrote for my sociology class, where at the end I just was like, you know, F it. I went on this rant about how my white privilege, you know, I don't have a yacht yet, you know, where's my membership card, I didn't get it, I don't have all this free stuff I supposedly am entitled to because I'm white, and you know, it's just so ridiculous. But of course, if you are part of the LGBTQ community, just okay, you know, way to go.
Yeah.
I'm not. I've got friends who are. I had one friend who is a gay African-American man, and he says, and he was against gay marriage because he says, why would I want to put myself through that?
Yeah, you know, well, so it's because we should be allowed to be as miserable as everyone else, apparently. But I think it's going to I think it just seems perfect that we need to do like a white privilege, you know, like African-American rights episode, because it's perfect. You as a white male and me as a black woman, it just seems awesome to do a libertarian angle between, because I just think, especially with the craziness of Mizzou and all that, I think it'd be good for us to comment on that, because I think we both probably think that was the most ridiculous thing we've ever seen.
Oh, I think so too. Should we just go ahead and mark that down for our second episode, that's what we're going to discuss, is supposed racial privilege or the lack thereof?
Yes, because, I mean, I think I've incensed a lot of people on my Facebook talking about that. It's hilarious. Okay. Yeah, so that should be the next episode.
I don't get into it now, but I want to say one thing about that. I had a friend who was libertarian before I was libertarian, and if I could go back and find him, Dewan Kelly, you are one of my heroes in life. He moved to Texas. I'm from Oklahoma. He moved to Texas, and he even said, you know, there is hate for the so-called privileged white man, but there is even more hate for the black man who steps out of line.
Yeah.
And I've not experienced that, but if you've experienced something of the sort, you know, I just can't imagine being told, you know, you're not black enough or you don't understand.
Oh, yeah. We will.
Something like that.
We will definitely step into that on the episode, because I straddle the line of too light black person. So we can definitely talk about that. So, yeah.
All right. We'll get into that. We don't want to spoil anything, just to give you guys a little teaser. Did you have anything else you wanted to know about your co-host here?
Let's see. Well, I got to know. We got to talk about the important things in life.
Oh, yes.
Favorite sport?
Football. American football.
Oh.
Of course. I'm a huge Denver Bronco fan.
Yes. Well, they took down the Patriots, so this week they are on my list of, you know, people that I like. And, of course, he's the brother of my favorite team, the Giants. Even though, well, I used to say I would love Peyton over Eli, but Peyton's kind of going noodle arm. But hey, and you know, my quarterback somehow has one more ring than him, even though every time Eli throws a football, I almost have a heart attack because it wobbles through the air. And I'm like, please somebody catch that. That's not on the opposite team before I have a heart attack.
Catch it. I mean, that's a given. Although Beckham can catch anything, but mark my words, next year Peyton Manning will be the world's best bingo player.
I think it's about time, but Peyton Manning is one of the greats, man. I will always love me some Peyton Manning.
Yeah, as long as we beat the Patriots, right? So.
Yeah, because.
You know what? I went to the game in 2009. I don't know how long you've been a Giants fan, but in 2009, I went to the Thanksgiving game between the Broncos and Giants in Denver.
I managed to become a Giants fan the season after they won the Super Bowl in 2008 without knowing they won that one. I can honestly say that, because some people jump on bandwagons right after. I was the idiot who didn't check the season before. And then they continue to suck.
You didn't jump on it. The bandwagon kind of ran over you.
Yeah, and I didn't even see it coming.
Yeah.
But, of course, then they won another one in 2012 and then continued to miss the playoffs after, so... You know, I guess I'm I'm stuck on it for life, and they still suck right now, so.
I think they'll pull out the division. I don't think you have anything to worry about there. So the finer things in life. If you're actually listening to this on iTunes, I want to say thanks for listening to us unprofessional people talk about this. Leave us a review and a rating. Tell us what you hate about us. And if you are a newborn libertarian, or if you're a libertarian and you just kind of want to talk about your experience, we want to talk to you. So go ahead and I don't know if we'll set up a Facebook page or something.
That's already set up.
Oh, we do have a Facebook
yes.
page.
Yes, maybe I should lay out that information.
Kim, why don't you tell them? If you want to be on the show, comment on it, and we would love to have you.
Yes, and you can do that. I have the info right here. You actually, you can even tweet us. How amazing is that? We have a Twitter. It would only fit part of a name, so you can tweet us at Newborn Liberty. You can actually email us at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com, and you can actually find the Facebook page at Newborn Libertarian. You can just search that out, and we'll be on iTunes in a little bit here. And if you can, just search out Newborn Libertarian, rate us, leave a comment. Like I said, leave us I like fives. I don't know if Christian likes fives. Or if you give us a one, at least tell us what we can do to improve. Like I said, we're kind of unprofessional, but, you know, we'll work on it. And if you want to be on the show, if you want to be on the show, use any of those means. I'm willing to take anybody. We like questions. Heck, even if you're like progressive or conservative, we want you on the show too.
Yeah, we are equal opportunity voice givers. We want to hear from you, and we want you to challenge our beliefs, and we want to obviously challenge your beliefs. But yeah, Kim, I had a lot of fun today. You're such an interesting person. You're so fun to talk to. And it's great to get together like this and to get something started.
Well, I label you as the smart one. I'm only here to be the weird one.
No, I think we're both weird, and I think we're both equally smart here. I just talk fast. That's all I do. People in Oklahoma think I'm smart because everyone else talks slow, but I just talk fast.
And just in case somehow Jason or Amy listens to this, I'm ready for them to point out all the random weird things I say. And just for Jason and Amy, nuclear. There you go.
Athlete. How many can we come up with?
I don't. Are there any more? How do you put? What other words can you put random syllables in?
Well, you can take one out of temperature. You can say temperature.
Temperature. Oh, that's a good one. Temperature.
Library.
Oh, that was the worst.
Nobody says that anymore.
I think we've now devolved. All right. Well, I don't know when the next podcast will come out. I'm pretty sure it'll be soon because I like to talk a lot. But until then, guys, this is Kim and
Christian.
All right. Talk to you soon.
See you guys later. Bye.